I've only ever been in court a couple of times. Now, Dan and I got arrested and I spent a day in the cells, but that's another story for another day. But one time that I was in court was to hear a summing up. I wasn't connected with the situation, but it was part of my role as a pastor that I needed to hear about the case. And I was there for the summing up, the end of the pros and the cons from the prosecution and the defense. The judge summed up the case. And Job chapters 29 to 31 are Job's summing up for the defense. By this point in the book, we've had plenty of slander about Job. We've had plenty of accusations from the comforters, plenty of guesses from those so-called friends as to his faults and his sins. Now, as readers, we know that it's not true. We know that Job is blameless and he's upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil. We know that none of the wicked or wrong things that have been said about Job are true. But how can Job persuade his friends that he hasn't done the things that they're accusing him of? And more important, how can Job get an answer from God? And so in desperation at this point in the book, Job calls down a curse on himself if he should have done any of the wicked things they described. That's really what chapter 31 is. We only just read a few verses from it. And he said, if I've acted with injustice, but he says all sorts of things. If I've done this, or if I've done this, or if I've done this, or if I've done this, let God's curse come down upon me. It's as it were a final electrifying call for justice. So we see how he writes, here is my signature. We're under oath. I haven't done any of these things. If I've done any of these things, then may the most terrible things happen to me. Here is my signature. Let the Almighty answer me. Now, Job is not blowing his own trumpet. He's fighting to clear his name. It's not as if Job spent his time before these things happened explaining what a great guy he was. No, he was too busy doing good. But he's forced into this situation, we find him here forced to defend himself. But in doing so, we get a front row seat on what it looks like to fear God and to avoid evil. You know, chapter 1 said that there was no one like Job in terms of his moral caliber, in terms of his quality, in terms of what sort of a chap he was, in terms of... But we don't hear much about exactly what that looked like. We see something of his piety, his prayers for his children. We have something of that, but as it were, we take the narrator's word for it, we take God's word for it, and so we know that it's true. But what exactly does that mean? What is this exemplary man really like? And in a sense, in God's providence, in God's goodness, Job is forced, as it were, to say how he lived. And so we are able to benefit from that and to see that. And so here it all is, this description of the godly man, this summing up. We take these chapters under three headings. And the first heading is basically taken from chapter 31. And it's this: Job shunned sin. Job shunned sin. That means that he was deadly serious about avoiding everything that was wrong, and he was deadly serious about avoiding everything that was evil. Chapter 1, the narrator described Job as a man who turned away from evil. That means that, doesn't mean he was doing it and then he stopped doing it. It means that he avoided it at every turn, every instance where he might be tempted to do something wrong, he sought to avoid that. God says that very same thing about Job. God said that Job was a man who turned away from evil. And last week we saw that that's a big part of wisdom. Chapter 28, remember what it is. Then God said to man, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to turn away from evil is understanding. To turn away from evil is understanding. So what does it mean? What does it look like to shun sin? Well, as clearly as almost anywhere else in all of Scripture, Job chapter 31 shows us what it means to shun sin. It shows us what it means to live as God would have us to live. Let's just dip in and see what Job was like. Firstly, Job had been a faithful husband. So Job says, if my heart has been enticed towards a woman, and if I've lain in wait at my neighbor's door, then let my wife grind for another, let others bow down on her. For that would have been a heinous crime. It would be an iniquity to be punished by the judges. That would have been a fire that consumes as far as Abaddon, and it would burn to the root of all my increase. So I've been faithful. I made promises when I got married, forsaking all others. And Job had kept those promises. And he had not been enticed. His heart had not been enticed. He was a powerful man. Many, many advantages, doubtless, if he'd have gone down that path to have any woman that he wanted. But he hadn't. Job had been a faithful husband. And also, in the matter, even of his eyes, what he looked at. See what he says in verse 1? I've made a covenant with my eyes. I made a solemn promise, a deal with myself. How then could I gaze at a virgin? What would be my portion from God above and my heritage from the Almighty on high? Is not calamity for the unrighteous and disaster for the workers of iniquity? Does not he see my ways and number all my steps? Job said, you know, I was faithful, not just as it were outwardly, but inwardly. In a deal, I was careful at what I looked at. I couldn't just look at a young lady in a wrong way. I know God sees my ways, and he sees my heart, and he numbers my steps. So Job had been a faithful husband, the first way in which he shunned sin. And then we see that Job had been honest. These were the verses that I read. This is the water from chapter 31. If I've walked with falsehood and my foot has hastened to deceit, let me be weighed in a just balance. Let God know my integrity. If my step has turned aside from the way, my heart has gone after my eyes. And if any spot has stuck to my hands, then let me sow and another eat. And let what grows for me be rooted out. Job had been honest in his dealings. He was, again, a powerful man, a man with, as it were, many business interests. And yet he had been honest, a man of integrity. There was no dodgy dealing. There were no sidelines. There was no dishonesty about him. And he treated others fairly. If I have rejected the cause of my manservant or my maidservant when they brought a complaint against me, what then shall I do when God rises up, when he makes inquiry? What shall I answer him? Did not he who made me in the womb make him? And did not one fashion us in the womb? You see what Job is saying? He said, look, I never mistreated people who were poor or vulnerable. I never exploited. I never took advantage of my position because I recognized that they were human beings made by God just as much as I was. Job had been honest in his dealings. He treated others fairly. He'd never been dismissive of a complaint. If my land has cried out against me and its furrows have wept together, if I've eaten its yew without payment and made its owners breathe their last, let thorns grow instead of wheat and foul weeds instead of barley. You see what he said? It's as if his own land had seen how he treated the laborers. Maybe there was no independent, but the land had seen, and if in a sense the land cried out, Job is cheated. He hasn't paid their wages. You know, they've worked, but he hasn't paid. He said, well, if that was to be the case, then may all of it just be overgrown. Because he treated others fairly. He wasn't dismissive of complaints or criticisms. See how easily that happens when someone's powerful. You know, when someone's powerful, they dismiss those who are critical of them or complain against them. There's no justice. But that wasn't Job. Job listened. Job was receptive. And Job had not exploited his power. He says there in verse 21, if I've raised my hand against the fatherless because I saw my help in the gates, then let my shoulder blade fall from my shoulder. And let my arm be broken from its socket. So he's saying, look, I didn't, as it were, take advantage because I knew that I had backup. That's what he means when he says, I saw my help in the gate. Do you know what? The city gate was the place where the leaders of the city were. And Job, you know, they were all Job's friends. They all admired Job. They all looked up to Job. But Job says, I never exploited that. I never took advantage of that. I never raised my hand against the fatherless, as it were. I never mistreated someone who was vulnerable and poor because I knew I could get away with it. No. Job had been a faithful husband. Job had been honest. And Job refused to trust in his riches. See what Job says. If I have made gold my trust, or called fine gold my confidence, if I've rejoiced because my wealth was abundant, or because my hand had found much. Well, that was the point that the adversary made, the Satan made, wasn't it? Oh, Job's the way he is because he's got everything he needs. But Job said, no, it wasn't like that. Even though I had so much, I didn't trust him. Even though I was so rich, that wasn't where I put my confidence. And that wasn't the thing that thrilled me in life. It wasn't all about money. I enjoyed the good things that God gave. He did describe something about his children all around him and his steps washed with butter, this idea that he was appreciative, he wasn't entitled. He was grateful, he enjoyed the good things that God gave him, but he didn't trust in them. They weren't his confidence. They weren't the thing that lit him up. Job refused to trust in his riches. And indeed, Job refused to worship anything other than God. He said, here, if I've looked at the sun when it shone, or the moon moving in splendor, my heart has been secretly enticed and my mouth has kissed my hand. This also will be an iniquity to be punished by the judges, for I would have been false to God above. Job said, I wasn't tempted to worship the sun or the moon or the stars. The idea of my mouth kissing his hand, it was in a sort of a way of showing worship or love. I was never tempted to worship anyone other than God. No, it is in our society. You know, there are many people who are not taken up with riches. They have some other God. Maybe pleasure, maybe status, it may be popularity. They're quite relaxed about how much they have, but there's some other God. But Job said, I didn't trust in my riches, but nor did I worship anything else. And finally, Job says that he refused to gloat. Verse 29, if I've rejoiced at the ruin of him who hated me, or exulted when evil overtook him, I've not let my mouth sin by asking for his life with a curse. You know how easy it is, isn't it? When you've got someone who's really winds you up, or someone who's been really nasty to you, or unkind to you, mistreated you, said bad things about you, and then something bad happens to them. He had it come in. Serves him right, deserves it. Job didn't do that. If I've rejoiced at the ruin of him who hated me, or exulted when evil overtook me, he refused to gloat and he refused to cover up. If I've concealed my transgressions as others do by hiding my iniquity in my heart. Here is the proof. Job was not perfect. Job knew that he wasn't perfect, but he didn't try and cover it up. Because I stood in great fear of the multitude and the contempt of families terrified me, so that I kept silence and did not go out of doors. Job wasn't going to hide his faults for fear of what people would think of him. He didn't try and, you know, I never said that, or I never did that. He would admit when he was at fault. And it wasn't all about a PR exercise for Job. Job shunned sin. I wonder how we measure up to that list. Job's integrity rebukes us, doesn't it? And it rebukes our society. We think about how our society fails in all of these ways. It fails in unfaithfulness in relationships. It fails in lust. It fails in dishonesty, dodgy dealings. It fails in exploitation, others who are not treated fairly. It fails in its materialism and readiness to gloat, all about image, making sure people don't think badly of us. Job shuns sin, and the character and the quality of his life rebukes us. When we look at that, we think, could I stand up and say that? Could I make that declaration? If I've done any of these things wrong, then may God judge me, may he strike me down. And I say, well, I'm not going to say that. Feel like we're in that position. The summing up that shows us up. Job shunned evil. Should also inspire us. We should say, I want to be more like that. The second thing that we see about Job is that Job did good. Job was deeply committed to both justice and mercy. You know, there's a defective sort of goodness. There's a sort of version of goodness which is all consumed with avoiding things. Someone who thinks they're good because they don't do this and they don't do that and they don't do the other. I've never done this. I've never done that. I've never got into trouble with this or that or the other. But it's not positive. It's just negative. It's just, in a sense, things I've avoided. And yet that's not Bible goodness. Bible goodness is a positive. There is an aspect of that. There are things to avoid. But the sum total of holiness is not avoiding what's wrong, but doing what's right. Even the Ten Commandments are summed up positively. I say, don't murder, don't cheat on your marriage, don't steal, don't lie. But how is that summed up? Love your neighbor as yourself. There has to be this positive aspect. There has to be this positive element. It's like the person who says, I've never done anyone any harm. Is that all you can say? Our goal in life should not be to never do anyone any harm. We should positively want to do good. And Job did good. That was very much the case with Job. And we see it across all three of the chapters. So we see it in chapter 29, mercy and justice. Remember what we read this, didn't we? When the ear heard, it called me blessed. And when the eye saw, it approved. When people saw Job passing in the street, their faces lit up. When they heard his name mentioned, Job. Job. Why? Because he delivered the poor who cried for help. And the fatherless who had none to help him. Job stepped in to help people when they had no one to help them. The blessing of him who was about to perish came upon me. Maybe that was someone who was terminally ill, and yet Job made life comfortable for that person. And I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. Here's the widow. She's got no one to look after her. She's got no one to provide for her. But suddenly, there's a gift. There's a hamper on the doorstep. Love from Job. Or however it might be. I put on, and it's not just, as it were, his commitment to generosity. It's not just, as it were, charitable, but it was about social justice. I put on righteousness in it and clothed me. My justice was like a robe and a turban. I broke the fangs of the unrighteous and made him drop his prey from his teeth. He dealt with systemic problems in society. He sought to put things right, not just as it were in a sense handouts, not just to help people who are in trouble, but he tried to fix the mess that had gotten them there. He saw disparities. He saw exploitation. And he wasn't content simply to not do that himself. But he sought, as it were, bring about justice. We see that Job did good. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame, concerned for those with disabilities. I was a father to the needy, and I searched out the cause of him who I did not know. It wasn't just that Job, his neighbors and his friends and his family and his extended family and the friends of his family, and he was able to do something for them. But it was even people that he didn't know, that he had no connection with, and yet he looked, how can I help? Who's in need? I don't know this person, but maybe there's something I can do for them. Job did good. In fact, Job saw his opportunities to do good as part of the blessings of his past life. When he reflected on what had made his past life so good, one of the things was, I had these opportunities. He saw it as a privilege and a ministry. So different Job was from that picture of Satan, this self-centered piety. Job's is only in it for himself. Job was so different from that. Job lived for other people. And then we see it in chapter 30, how heartfelt he was. Job says these words, they're full of pathos and meaning. Job said, did not I weep for him whose day was hard? Was not my soul grieved for the needy? But when I hoped for good, evil came. When I waited for light, darkness came. Then we see that sort of turn of events. But we see in that verse 25 that it wasn't just, okay, I'll write a check for that. And I'll sort this out and I'll do that. But Job really cared. He really felt. Did not I weep for him whose day was hard? Was not my soul grieved for the needy? That was what inspired Job. That was what drove him, because he had this deep empathy, this deep concern for people when he saw it. Job did good, and it was heartfelt. He used the resources he had, he used the influence that he had to make life better across the board for people, because he had a soft heart, a tender heart. The fact that his life was good and sheltered and protected and blessed didn't mean that he was dismissive of the troubles of others. But we see the quality and the caliber of this man. So many of the pitfalls of riches, so many of the pitfalls of so-called goodness, Job avoided. Job wasn't a sort of two-dimensional figure. It wasn't some sort of, remember my daughter, Eleanor, was writing an essay for her philosophy degree on moral saints. Lady Susan Wolford described moral saints in a way which was very unattractive. You know, someone who's really a good person is not really going to be a nice person to know. Job blows that away. Job was so attractive as a person in his goodness. This wasn't dutiful. This wasn't a PR opportunity. You know, so many businesses, they have a charity, don't they? So we support this charity. Now, you don't want to be cynical, but I'm sure there must be some of those businesses for whom that is, we need that. We need that on our website. We need that on our page. But Job wasn't like that. It wasn't PR for Job PLC. This was genuine. This was the heart of the man. Then we see that Job was generous. If I've withheld anything that the poor desired, or caused the eyes of the widow to fail, or have eaten my morsel alone, and the fatherless has not eaten of it. For from my youth, the fatherless grew up with me as with a father, and from my mother's womb, I guided the widow. So, somewhat exaggerated there. But there was a sense in which he said, I invited people in. If I'd seen anyone perish for lack of clothing, or the needy without covering, if his body has not blessed me, and if he was not warmed with the fleece of my sheep, if there was someone who was cold and shivering because I hadn't given them a garment, if there was someone who was hungry because I hadn't shared my food, and if the men of my tent has not said, who is there that has not been filled with his meat? It's almost as if the folks who are working for Job said, there is just like nobody who hasn't benefited from Job. You wonder if it's also almost a bit of exasperation. You know, everyone has been helped. Anyone who comes, he helps. The sojourner is not lodged in the street. I have opened my doors to the traveller. It's more than at arm's length. It was his own home. It was at his own meal table. There was nothing, as it were, arm's length about Job's charity. There was a generosity about him, this rich man, this greatest of men, and yet a man who was generous, heartfelt. Job did good. It's very striking again, isn't it? How do we measure up? How do we match up to this description? We might say, well, we don't have Job's opportunities. But the point was, if we had Job's opportunities, would we have Job's character and calibre? And the answer is no. We are what we are. And if we were in his situation, we would be what we are now. If we're generous now, we would be generous with lots. If we're stingy now, the people who say, well, you know, if I had more, I'd be more generous. It's just not true. If I was in a different situation, I'd be more compassionate. It's not true. We are what we are. And yet Job was this high caliber man. Job shunned sin. Job did good. And then thirdly, these three chapters, Job loved God. Let me sum up what is this man, this exemplary man? What can we say about him? What does real goodness and godliness, what does real character of life and caliber of character look like? These three things: Job shunned sin, Job did good, and Job loved God. Job had been a very rich man. We know that, don't we, from chapter 1. And in chapter 29, he mentioned his family, he mentioned his prosperity, he mentioned the respect that he'd enjoyed, he mentioned the gratitude that he'd earned from all the good that he'd done, he mentioned his hopes of a happy end, he mentioned his influence. But none of those were his greatest treasure. None of those were his greatest treasure. He mentioned them all, he valued them all, family, prosperity, respect, gratitude, hopes, influence, but none of them were his greatest treasure. Job had been a very rich man. And Job had lost a lot. Chapter 30 tells us now that he's the butt of jokes. He's taunted by the dregs of society. Once he was the most honorable. Once the most honourable men honoured him, and now the most despicable men despise him. He's gone from the pinnacle to the depths. And it's open season on Job. Read that in chapter 30 and verse 10. They abhor me, they keep aloof from me, they do not hesitate to spit at the sight of me, because God has loosed my cord and humbled me. They have cast off restraint in my presence. Open season on Job. You say anything you like about him as you pass by the rubbish heap outside the city. You can laugh at him. His riches and his honour have both been blown away. My honour is pursued as by the wind. My prosperity has passed away like a cloud. His hopes are replaced with anguish. We read about his anguish, didn't we? Days of affliction have taken hold of me. My lyre is turned to mourning, my pipe to the voice of those who weep. His health has been broken, verse 17, the night racks my bones. The pain that gnaws me takes no rest. Well, verse 28, I go about darkened, but not by the sun. I stand up in the assembly and cry for help. My skin turns black and falls from me. My bones burn with heat. He was the butt of jokes. He was despised. It was open season on him. His riches and his honor were blown away. His hopes were replaced with anguish. His health was broken. But none of those were his deepest loss. Had all of those good things, but they weren't his greatest treasure. All these terrible things happened to him, but none of those were his deepest loss. What then? Job's greatest treasure and his deepest loss was the sense of God's friendship. That was what really hurt Job. It's interesting how he starts in chapter 29 and he describes the past. Oh, that I were in the months of old. What was it about the past? Where does he start? Oh, that I was in the months of old, as in the days when God watched over me, when his lamp shone upon my head and by his light I walked through darkness as I was in my prime, when the friendship of God was upon my tent, when the Almighty was yet with me. And if, imagine someone had a terrible accident and their home was burnt down. The house burnt down and I lost all my books. Or the house burnt down and I lost all my Lego minifigures. The house burnt down and I lost all my old photo albums. When you listen to them, you'd know what they really treasured, wouldn't you? Whatever it was. All my pictures. Or all the gifts that I'd received. So we know what Job really misses by how he started. Oh, that I was in the months of old when the friendship of God was upon me, when the Almighty was yet with me. That was his greatest treasure, God's friendship, that sense that God was his friend, that God was with him. We can see what Job really valued by the description of what he lost. It wasn't just the gifts. He was, oh, my flocks, oh, my family. It was the smile of the giver. That was what really hurt him. And yet another answer to Satan's cynicism. Remember, Satan was saying he's only in it because of the things he's lost, or he's only in it because of the things he has. But when we see how Job responded, we see that the thing that he treasured more than anything else was God. The very opposite of what the adversary said. The adversary said, well, it's not you at all, God, it's the things you give. And yet we find that it's God. He's grateful for the gifts because he's grateful to the giver. Then we see how he grieves over the loss of it in chapter 31. God has cast me into the mire and I have become like dust and ashes. I cry to you for help, but you do not answer me. I stand and you only look at me. You have turned cruel to me. With the might of your hand, you persecute me. This is the thing that if he still felt that God was with him, he could manage all the rest. He could absorb all the rest. But it was this sense that God had turned against him, that God was his enemy, that made it so hard. This was the agony of heaven's silence. That's a challenge for us, isn't it? What do you treasure? What do you treasure? Are there things of which you say, I could never be happy without? Finish the sentence. I could never be happy without. Dot, dot, dot. Or maybe, I could only be happy if this happened. I wonder if on that list of I could never be happy without, the friendship of God is at the top of the list. I wonder if it's even on the list. Could never be happy without the friendship of God. If I had all of these other things, but didn't have God's friendship, I wouldn't be happy. I'm going to close with the song, Father God, I wonder how I managed to exist without the knowledge of your parenthood and your loving care. Sense of I could, is God our greatest treasure, the sense of God's friendship. So this is